For another perspective on MDS and AML, I met with Dr. Guillermo Garcia Manero, who began our conversation by providing his perspective on AML.
That disease has gone also through a major change. When I joined MD Anderson around 10 years ago, now of course we're in Texas, so we're brave people here, but we will not hesitate to give massive doses of chemotherapy to an 80-something-year-old man with AML. Now, we have great support here. We put them in a unit called the Protected Environment with the best nursing in the country, I have to tell you. These patients will endure that. But the reality is that the response rate was low, mortality was high, and most importantly, relapse rate was very, very high. And as you know, most of these patients, the same way as in MDS, they are older, not younger patients. So we had very effective therapies with high-dose RSC programs that work well in patients with well is quote-unquote, in patients with younger characteristics, but most of these patients that are older do not benefit from that type of strategy. So I think that what has gone on over the last, I would say, 5-6 years has been trying to find a non-intensive approach for older acute myelogenous leukemia. I think that most of us have gone away from the 7+3 or the IA type of program for AML. That is basically gone. Now, what is the age cutoff? I don't know. In our group, it's 16. Some studies is 65. You can go up to 70. But the reality is that beyond 70, there is no role nowadays for a 7+3 or such a program. Now, there are exceptions. There is the rare patient that is older with a core binding factor abnormality in version 16, 821. In the older group, that's exceedingly rare. But they exist. They actually will endure a FLAG type of induction chemotherapy. The question is that they don't really tolerate, maintain consolidation, so they have to be treated a little bit different. Now, you have someone that is 65 to 70 with diploid, 3-negative, NPM1 positive, who plays golf and tennis and does all these things every day 10 times. Yeah, they probably could go ahead and receive that type of therapy, but those are not the common patients. So I think the emphasis here has been how to treat those patients with AML. And there's no standard of care. So right now, I have to say that we need to refer all those patients also for some type of clinical trial. And there's a bunch of them. There are drugs like clofarabine that actually may be approved the next few months for that indication. The hypomethylating agents are also extensively being studied in acute myeloid leukemia. And there's a plethora of other compounds that are trying to target that population of older patients with AML, either at first presentation or at relapse. And I think that what's going to happen, actually, I think that we're going to see some data probably by ASH this year, if not by the ASCO meeting, is that one of these agents is going to make it in AML. Now, if they make it, it's going to be, and I'm just speculating here, it's going to be marginally making it. I think they are going to make it because the regulatory agencies really need a benchmark. You know, we really need some platform to start building our drug development strategy here. And right now, we don't have a standard of care. And that's actually what is limiting a little bit of this research. So I think that in a few months, we hear that clofarabine is approved for frontline acute myelogenous leukemia. Then I think that that data will be probably based on some type of response criteria. I'm not sure that survival or some of the other endpoints will be there. But the reality is that it will not matter. We will have some type of a strategy that then we can start building future interventions. And there's a huge interest by a lot of different investigators and pharmaceutical companies trying to get that done.